Just a footnote on the previous discussion that we were, I mentioned that General Weissel, and Phil asked about Weissel. He was 30 years old. He was a West Point graduate and an engineer by training. And there's a lighthouse at Mackinac Island at the tip of Michigan, and the rest of us, he built it. And it's considered one of the most remarkable and the largest and the earliest, and a whole bunch of details. That was General Weissel, who was the master of Richmond and the master who freed the slaves. He was a military man who knew his duty, and he was proud of his colored troops, of whom there were 200,000 in the Union Army. Don't let anybody tell you different. And we expect now, shortly, we will have Dr. Keith Ellis. We're going to be talking about this wonderful man, Eduardo Galeano, but with a particular essay in mind, or a thesis in mind. Again, it's the Taylor Report. I'll tell you again, you can still donate, incidentally. April is not kaput at CIUT.fm, and just go to that and donate. And since I'm mentioning it, I'll just tell you, you could do that for the Taylor Report. So it's CIUT.fm. And we are joined now by Keith Ellis, and he is a poet and translator and professor emeritus and a lot of wonderful things. Are you there, Dr. Ellis?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Now, you introduced a topic last Monday. We were speaking to you. Of course, the starting point was that the remarkable essayist and writer who passed on, Eduardo Galeano, and the evaluation of him. And I remember specific reference, of course, to the wonderful book Open Veins of Latin America, Five Centuries of the Pillage of a Continent.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, that book became rather celebrated because Hugo Chavez either gave to President Obama or tried to in order to help him with his education, which he desperately needs.
Yes, he did give him a copy of the
book. He did get to him.
Yeah.
And now...
he handed it to him personally, yes.
Yeah, there is a photograph. Mm-hmm. Obama looked a little uncomfortable, but in what I liked especially about your approach to this, which you said, well, you didn't want to do a sort of a general thing about what a marvelous fellow Eduardo Galeano was. You wanted to point out that he had taken up a topic which really needed airing, that of the fate of Paraguay.
Yeah.
And the remarkable things that had happened there and the very ugly war that destroyed that.
Yeah.
And it focused on the gentleman,
Dr. Francia.
And we were at the point, could you start us again on how did, why your own interest in him and why you were so pleased that Galeano had done this?
Yes. Well, I think that José Gaspar Rodríguez de Francia is his full name. He was born in 1766.
Yes.
And he was responsible, really, for negotiating the independence of Paraguay in 1811. And it was the first country to be independent, the first country where negotiation instead of war was carried out. And since 1811, Paraguay has remained independent. Venezuela got independence sometime before that, about 1810. But it's been interrupted because the Spaniards retook Venezuela, it needed several wars and battles by Simón Bolívar to finally achieve the independence of not just Venezuela, but several other South American countries.
Mm-hmm.
But José Gaspar Rodríguez de Francia, Dr. Francia, did things so well. He was a brilliant person. He was highly educated. He had a PhD and used his education for the benefit of his people in Paraguay. And he didn't get acclaim from people, from other academics, intellectuals, and so on, because he was really going against the tide.
Mm-hmm.
He was really for the independence and sovereignty of his country, and he had the misfortune of not having good relations with Simón Bolívar. And that meant that his prestige was easily attacked by the Europeans. The Europeans wanted to attack it for motives that weren't really worthy. Britain, Great Britain, had, by the middle of the second decade of the 19th century, had access and control, one might say, of the lucrative parts of the economies of countries like Argentina and Chile, and so on. And since by that time, by 1816, when Dr. Francia was acclaimed and made, elected to this title, which mm-hmm. is Supreme and Perpetual Dictator of Paraguay.
Mm-hmm.
He was elected to that title after a period in which he demonstrated his extraordinary abilities for bringing prosperity and peace and social harmony to some extent, because there was always resistance, because his measures were so bold that they were unusual, of course, exceptional for that time,
mm-hmm.
because, for example, in the field of agriculture, which was basic in Paraguay, where the Spaniards had one crop, he introduced three crops.
Mm-hmm.
And the item that he was cultivating and making a great income from for the country was mate, yerba mate.
Yeah, but isn't there a wonderful portrait of him holding a mate?
Oh, yes.
I love that.
Well, he and he was very jealous of the cultivation of that, jealous of the national ownership of that. And one of the problems that he had was that Simón Bolívar's great friends were von Humboldt, who was regarded as the second discoverer of Latin America, of the Americas, and his main lieutenant, his main aide, main botanist, a man called M.A. Bonplante.
Mm-hmm.
And Simón Bolívar was a great friend of Humboldt and owed a lot to Humboldt, respected him a great deal, because among other things, it was Humboldt who suggested to Simón Bolívar that after Humboldt had made his great tour of Latin America, well, especially the countries of Venezuela, Colombia, Cuba, some of the Andean countries, and it really did a systematic study of the geography of and the geology of those countries, showed the Spaniards, of course, gave him permission to do it, because the Spaniards had control of South America when he went in 1799, and continued his exploration until 1804. It was a long-term project. And he did this showing the Spaniards what they really didn't see that they had, and showing at the same time the Latin Americans that they had precious resources there, and that those resources were enough and the people were enough to have their independence.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Bonplante and Humboldt went back to Europe, to France, really, Bonplante decided to go back to South America and went to a sort of ambiguous part of the border between Argentina and Paraguay. And then he drifted into Paraguay and started the cultivation of mate.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he did it without the permission of the ruler of Paraguay. And so...
Not a good idea.
very much so. And so, Francia summoned him to Asunción. And he told him that, well, you seem to like cultivating mate. Well, you're going to be doing it here for the state, and you're going to keep on doing it until I tell you that you can leave Paraguay. And so, so he had to do that. He didn't really put him in prison. Mm-hmm. But he gave him the freedom. He's a valuable scientific mind, and so he's a medical doctor. And Bonpland really behaved himself quite well because he treated people who were ill. He cultivated, of course, scientifically the mate, and he also obeyed some of the social norms. For example, Francia had decreed that Europeans living in Paraguay, because he was so interested in the integration of the people of Paraguay, the Guarani people and the Spanish people, that they had to marry, European men had to marry Guarani or black or mestizo women. And so, and Bonpland actually had as his partner a Guarani woman, had two children with her. And so he behaved quite well. But at the same time, there's a tremendous campaign launched for his freedom. And in that, Simón Bolívar took part. And Simón Bolívar was so worked up over this issue of Bonpland that at one time he threatened to declare war on Paraguay to free Bonpland. Bonpland had supporters also in Argentina, and you know, now his name is well known in Argentina because there's a street named after him in Buenos Aires. There's a market named after him, and where he actually ultimately settled in northern Argentina, the area is named for him. Mm-hmm. Also in Venezuela.
So I assume this has all contributed to the why people have a problem appreciating Dr. Francia.
Exactly.
That they committed themselves to... they don't seem to be very happy with the independent behavior of a national leader who assumed that his state was sovereign.
Yes, but not just that, because the British particularly waged a tremendous campaign of demonization against Francia. They had people, scholars, write books against him, calling him tyrant and so on. And there are two Scottish brothers who wrote books. And the books were well circulated. And the bias against Francia was so great that eventually what happened was Francia died in 1840. And with his death, of course, the end of his regime, but not the end of his ideology or ideological influence in Paraguay, because it was very, very strong, the message, and the among Paraguayans, among the masses of the people in Paraguay, Francia had very, very strong support. And so the British wanted to get rid of that ideology. It was an ideology that was an obstruction to their, what we recognize today as a neoliberal aims in Paraguay. Since Paraguay was the most prosperous country in the Americas at the time, they wanted
that. I found that so remarkable. I just interrupted. Galeano points that out, and you know, if that generalization stands, that's very important. He said 100 years ago, he was writing in 1970, 100 years ago, Paraguay was the strongest economy.
That's right.
The most stable economy.
That's right.
In South America.
And very peaceful country.
And then it got
What happened was the British wanted to stamp out that way of running an economy for the benefit of the people. They wanted the benefits. The British wanted the benefits of the Paraguayan economy. And so things faltered somewhat after Francia's demise. But the ideology remained strong. And the British aimed to have this this ideology stamped out. And so they were always planning for a war against Paraguay. And they finally achieved that in 1865. It was a brutal war called the War of the Triple Alliance between Paraguay and, on the other hand, Argentina, Uruguay, and Brazil. Those three countries against Paraguay.
Yeah, but before you continue, I'll just tell everyone, this is Keith Ellis. And by the way, he is a translator of Nicolas Guillen, the great Cuban poet. And his books are available, and particularly at a different bookstore.
Booklist.
And a book list, pardon me. And I'm sorry, please. Yes.
Well, here, interesting that you mentioned Nicolas Guillen, because prior to Eduardo Galeano's bringing Francia to the fore in his book, it was the Cuban sage Nicolas Guillen who had mentioned Francia in one of his essays in 1964. He wrote an essay titled Cuba, Paraguay. And in that essay...
1964,
yeah, before Galeano.
Yes.
In that essay, he said, in school, they taught us that Francia was this terrible tyrant, this brutal dictator, and so on.
Uh-huh.
What they never taught us was that, in fact, this was the man who brought freedom to Paraguay, brought prosperity and social peace to Paraguay. They never told us these things. And so after Nicolas Guillen, then came Eduardo Galeano. Eduardo Galeano did this in the context of correcting Pablo Neruda, because Pablo Neruda, in his Canto General, a book of 1950, had placed Francia among the traitors to Latin America. This infuriated Galeano.
Amazing.
Yeah, because it infuriated Nicolas Guillen as well, of course, because they were seeing Neruda as following a sort of European ideology. And in fact, in Paraguay itself, the effort that the British made to stamp out the memory of Francia was so energetic that after the war, war was a brutal war. I mean, the population of Paraguay was reduced by nearly two-thirds because the men were killed, and then when the men were killed, the women joined in the fight. The children joined in the fight because they had that zeal to defend the independence and the sovereignty of Paraguay. When the British achieved that, immediately they brought in this neoliberal policy of extending loans to Paraguay, and that doomed Paraguay and made it the sort of the backward country that we come to know it today. And the Paraguayan intellectuals themselves, since they wanted to wipe out all the memory of Francia, if you have the chance to read the national anthem of Paraguay, which was written after Francia's time, Mm-hmm. It was, I think, it was about 1853 or 1863 that it was written. But it is the most stirring, the most militant, the most energetic of national anthems that you could ever read.
Yeah, something like the Marseillaise.
Yes, but much more committed to the idea of defending the mm-hmm. the country with lives and to the last person and so on, and they really meant it. And so the intellectuals in Paraguay themselves were silenced if they were inclined to support Francia.
Mm-hmm.
And so silenced or misled by the European ideology. For example, Paraguay has produced a novelist who is considered to be a great novelist, Augusto Roa Bastos.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1990, Vargas Llosa, the confused Peruvian novelist,
yes.
Assigned to several Latin American novelists the task of writing about dictatorships in Latin America,
yes.
Our dictators.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave to Roa Bastos, the Paraguayan, the task of writing about Francia.
Oh, boy.
And Francia accepted some of the writers refused that assignment. But Roa Bastos accepted. And he produced a novel titled Yo el Supremo, I the Supreme One,
mm-hmm.
With allusion to his title. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
And so that novel, at the time of the writing of the novel, Roa Bastos was a professor in France, teaching in one of the French universities, teaching literary theory, teaching Latin American literature and some Guarani literature as well. And so the French particularly loved the novel, though the novel was a novel probably because the novel was one that mocked Francia.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that mocking of Francia and the sort of beware of dictators, dictatorships, and so on. The French organized quite a few symposia on the novel. He was a great favorite of the French mm-hmm. theorists. And so this is an interesting story because Roa Bastos, after Stroessner, the Nazi dictator of Paraguay, step down. You remember that as the epoch of dictators, a brutal one,
yes.
torturing people, murdering people, Somoza, Trujillo in the Dominican Republic, and so on. Well, Stroessner had the privilege or the dishonor of being the worst of these dictators in the South American continent.
Mm.
And so Roa Bastos had to leave the country, and he lived in France and so on. But there, instead of writing, he could have chosen to write about Stroessner. But strangely, he wrote about and against Francia.
Boy. What a disgrace.
It was quite a disappointment. But then, the after praising him and so on in France, I think it was 2003, that after Stroessner's dictatorship, there was really a democratic election in Paraguay. The Duarte government came into place. And Roa Bastos went back to, was then in Paraguay, living in Paraguay. And one of the things that these French critics had said about this novel was that it should, Fidel Castro, for example, should take it as a warning about what happens to dictators.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened was that Roa Bastos went back to Paraguay, And Fidel Castro came to the swearing-in ceremony of Duarte when he became president. And Robastos upset the apple cart when he made this tremendous declaration. He said the least that one could do for Cuba is to give one's life.
Wow. And
so that stunned the European critics of his work. And
he's not going to get invited to the parties.
And moreover, Fidel invited Robastos to go to Cuba with him. Hmm. And when in Cuba, he was asked to make a selection of his works. And those works they would publish, and published, in fact, in Cuba. And interestingly, he did not mention Yo El Supremo, that novel for which he had so much acclaim in Europe.
That is a great story, yeah. Keith Ellis. I ask you this.
Yeah.
It strikes me that the Galeano thesis and the Fidel thesis, in a sense, where you told the story, there is a struggle against liberalism. He says the problem is the analysis of this man and of that epoch is that liberals don't understand.
Precisely. And it would have been a wonderful opportunity to bring Francia to the fore during that period of neoliberalism when that campaign was going on. I remember I was teaching at Stanford as visiting professor at the time, and an amazing number of academics from Latin America were passing through. That so many were coming to offer talks and so on, that we hardly had any time to do our teaching and have our classes, because the campaign, the neoliberal campaign was so strong at the time.
Yes.
And I was thinking of Francia at that time, and we're talking among colleagues and so on about him, but it would have been a great opportunity to bring him to the fore, and it was good that Galeano had done so in 1971. And that Nicolas Guillen had done so in 1964. Mm-hmm. What needs to happen is that there should be reconciliation between Francia and the great liberator Simón Bolívar, because the tension between them. People could refer to that and say, well, you know, Simón Bolívar didn't appreciate, didn't like Francia. And so Francia's contribution should be studied in some great depth.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be put alongside what Simón Bolívar did in liberating so many countries, the great liberator Simón Bolívar, and who did some other things. But the Francia's administration, Francia especially with regard to the recognition of the indigenous people, giving them full place.
Their language was the official language.
Yeah. It made it, one of the official languages of Paraguay.
Well,
and giving them full place in Paraguayan society. And, see, in a sense, Chavez, of course, with the coming of people like Evo Morales and so on in Bolivia, and giving place, the rightful place to the indigenous people in Bolivia, and Chavez doing everything he could too to do that.
In a way, he is reconciling with his personality.
Precisely.
We're going to have to go, Keith, but I'm going to say this.
That should be sure.
Keith Ellis is a poet. Could we assign you to write us a nice poem about how this might be done? We should organize a conference on that very point of Bolivar and Dr. Francia. Well, thank you very, very much, Keith.
Well, not at all.
We really appreciate it.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye.
Taylor Report, CIET 89.5 FM. Lucas, thanks very much, and Phil Conlon. We'll see you next week.